Anything combat with Johnny K.
It's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, wherein we discuss everything mixed martial arts and boxing. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today we've got a journalist and a broadcaster on our show. He was a Scottish amateur boxing champion from Dundee. Please welcome to the show, Frank Gilfeather. How are you, Frank?
Thank you, Johnny. Nice to be with you in sunny Australia.
Dude, are you 78? Is that your age right now?
Yes, I'm 78, 79 in December.
How do you feel? You've been training really hard, so how does the body feel right now?
Oh, fine. I'm lucky, you know. People younger than me get in touch through social media, through my Instagram and TikTok, saying, oh, I've got pains in my hands or my shoulders or my knees, all the joints. And they're maybe in their 50s or 60s, and they ask me, what do you do to overcome these difficulties? The short answer is, I'm lucky. I've never had any of these problems, apart from...
No injuries?
No, the only injuries I've had are maybe a steved thumb, or, you know, or I think I broke a knuckle once decades ago, you know, in the last century. But apart from that, I'm lucky. I've never, you know, I've had cut eyes, a couple of cut eyes. But as far as training is concerned, I give it full on stuff, and that's the only way I know how to do it.
How many fights have you had?
Well, I was trying to count them up, and it's round about the 200 mark. So what you've got to remember in those days in amateur boxing, particularly at the height of when I was boxing in the 1960s, you were boxing every other week. And if you were in the championships and you reached the final, whether it was district or national, that would be your third fight in that night. So nowadays, of course, it's spread over a matter of weeks, so you don't have any more than one contest per night. But in those days, you did it all in the one night. Okay, so they would have maybe two weight divisions working on the one night so that there could be rest periods for particular boxers, you know, when the heavier weight was in or the lighter weight, whatever it was, you got a bit of respite. But sometimes that respite was very minimal, and you would be in and out the ring within the hour. So it's changed for the better. And I wish in my day I didn't have to box three times in the one night.
Frank, what was the hardest part about boxing three times in a singular day? What do you think was the hardest part about doing that?
The hardest part was trying to overcome the energy loss, I guess, the tiredness, and, you know, try to keep your fitness levels up. That was important. You didn't do any specific training to, to help you through that kind of three-fight period. You just trained normally. But I think the difficult part was trying to get your breath back. Almost, you know, so in between contests, not only physically, but psychologically. So now you're coming up, you know, within the hour, say, against an entirely different opponent. One who would, you know, maybe be a southpaw, or a change, you know, different tactics and so on. So you had to come to terms with that aspect of boxing as well as the physical stuff.
Frank, did you end up going professional in boxing, or did you just stay in the amateurs?
No, I stayed in the amateurs. I mean, it wasn't for the lack of offers, because in those days, and even at the age of 15, 16, and I was training with professionals and sparring with professionals, leading professionals, like Walter McGowan, who became the world flyweight champion. I was his chief sparring partner for a while. So I had managers hovering and also making offers. But, you know, there was a certain, I'd be at the European Championships in East Berlin before the Berlin Wall came down. 1965, and I came back, and one big promoter said to me, right, you know, this is what's going to happen with you. You'll turn professional. You'll be managed by this guy. I'll promote your fights and so on. He had it all worked out. And it was at that time I decided, nah, this isn't for me. And I'm glad I didn't. You know, professional boxing, even now, is really difficult. But the thing about those days, the difference was, I think you had to be recognized by the British Boxing Board of Control as being a leading amateur boxer. So you've done something in the amateur game before they would grant a license to you. Nowadays, well, you could turn up and say, you know, I've had six fights or whatever, you know, and I've done well, and you'll get a license. And so that's driven standards down, in my view. I mean, I see lots of guys in professional boxing on the lower end of the bill who are simply not good enough. But they call themselves professional boxers. They've got the license to show it. But really, I've seen many, many better amateur fighters than they'll ever be.
You think that these guys shouldn't rush going into the professionals and should stay in amateurs for longer?
Well, there is that argument, yes. But what you've got to remember is that certainly in our country, the number of amateur promotions has gone down drastically in the last few decades. So while in my kind of era, you were boxing every other week, nowadays, you know, you're seeing young boxers who are lucky if they get three or four contests a year. When we were boxing three or four times, well, three times in the one night if you're going to be the champion. But generally speaking, you're boxing maybe four times in 2 months or even more. So nowadays, the amateurs can't get the contests. And that's why, in many respects, some of them are turning to professional boxing, saying, well, what's the point hanging around in the amateurs? I could be boxing as a pro and picking up some money, some pocket money, because that's all it is at the lower end. You know, you're never going to make a living out of professional boxing unless you're at the high end and the big money fights are coming along.
In your era, they kind of referred to it as gypsy fighting, but it's taken off a lot recently, the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. I know that you've heard about this. So Conor McGregor just bought a stake in Bare Knuckle. I wanted to ask your opinions on what do you think about Bare Knuckle boxing? Do you think that it's like some people refer to it as human cockfighting? What are your opinions on it?
Bare knuckle fighting. Wow. This is winding the clock back centuries. You know, it was 1865 when the Marquess of Queensberry introduced the Queensberry rules to try and regulate boxing in some way. Before that, it was all bare knuckle stuff. I mean, that was the era when boxing gloves came on the scene. I've trained a couple of bare-knuckle boxers. I didn't know they were bare-knuckle boxers till after I trained them. I do seminars all over the UK and abroad, in fact. And I try and teach the proper way, in my view, the proper way to box. And we start with defending yourself. You know, there is no point, in my view, in going into a contest where you've won it because you've scored maybe 1 point more than your opponent, which tells me that you've probably taken as many punches as your opponent, except for maybe one or two, which have given you the edge. So, but the bare-knuckle boxing, and you mentioned Conor McGregor, you're not going to believe this, but just 10 minutes ago, before we went into this podcast, I had a like from Conor McGregor on one of my posts. And
really?
I've had likes, and I've had a follower called Anderson Silva, who everybody knows and I know now, but I didn't have a clue who he was because I don't follow UFC or any of that stuff. And my son had said to me, do you know you've got Anderson Silva as a follower now? And my first thought was, what band does he play in? So I thought he's a musician or something. And he said, no, he's a big UFC star. Okay, fine, that's great. So it's wonderful. So that this kind of crossover between the, you know, UFC, MMA, all the combat sports are trying to merge. It's never going to happen with boxing. We've tried it recently with Ngannou and these guys, and even Conor McGregor. And while they are, you know, at the very top level of their careers, they're exceptional within this chosen sport. They'll never be boxers. Sorry, Conor. But what were we talking about? We're talking about bare-knuckle fighting. I think that's a step too far to go back. I mean, I've watched it on social media. And it, to me, it's kind of like, and this will upset a lot of people, but it, people have got to be careful. It's a bit like old style, the old version of white collar boxing. Now, do you have white collar boxing in Australia? Do you have that? Yeah.
Can you inform me on what that is?
Well, white collar boxing are guys who are in private gyms. They want to be boxers. They could be any age. You know, they're not necessarily young guys, but they've been training for 8 weeks because this is the way they load them. You can get 8 weeks training in a gym, and suddenly they're boxers. And they go in there, and of course, you just watch white collar boxing, and you'll see that the vast majority of those taking part have absolutely zero ability. And that's, now, I have an issue with that, not because of that, but because that's where people get hurt. In fact, in the last 3 years in the UK, two people died after taking part in a white collar event. So it's kind of all systems go. I mean, there are rules, boxing rules, but novices, which is what these people are, novices do daft things. So you could tend to be hurt by, you know, by being hit by another novice or elbows or whatever. So for me, the white collar boxing of today is a modern version of bare knuckle boxing. I was in a gym in London a few weeks ago doing a seminar, and I was coaching these guys, and the vast majority were middle aged. And some of them were white collar boxers, but there was this guy who was really good, and I'd have put him in his kind of mid-40s, maybe late-40s. And I said to him at one point, I said, I get the feeling you've boxed before. You know how to do this. And he said, yeah, I'm a bare knuckle fighter. And I can't imagine. I mean, I'd be terrified to do a bare knuckle fight simply because you would hurt your hands punching somebody in the head or whatever, on the elbow, you know. So I'm not a fan. I mean, it's pretty brutal.
You were talking about how Conor McGregor and Anderson Silva liked your stuff. You've been going viral as of late. So are you grateful that you're going viral now, kind of in your older age, or do you feel like you should have gone viral a little bit earlier?
Well, earlier... Johnny, the problem was earlier social media wasn't on the scene. What you got to remember, I grew up in a different world. So it's only, now we're talking about, and let me give you some information here. Last December, when we began on Instagram, for example, we'd been on TikTok for about a year, and TikTok had just absolutely taken off like wildfire. And we couldn't crack the Instagram nut. And last December, I had 170 followers on Instagram. Today, I've got 478,000. So that's taken off. But, you know, the big thing for me is the fact that I can get the message over about how boxing should be done properly. I see lots of social media boxing coaches who clearly have no idea what they're talking about. And this used to infuriate me. You know, I think, well, that guy is teaching all the wrong stuff. he's showing you how to do things incorrectly. So I'm trying in my way to rectify that, but I'm also having great fun at the same time. That's the big thing for me. And it's engaging because the comments I get are so powerful and encouraging. You know, I have a big message goes out to people, not just about boxing, is to keep fit, keep exercising, keep healthy. You'll live longer that way. And that's my message, you know, that you should never give up on yourself. That's my kind of tagline line. And the big thing for me then is that I get loads of comments from people middle-aged and right into their 70s saying, you've inspired me. I watch your videos. You're 78. And I'm thinking, right, he can do it. I can get out there. Even these small steps that I talk about, even walking, even skipping, shadow boxing, anything like that. You don't have to join a gym. It's better if you can because you've got the camaraderie of a gym and the atmosphere, and I think that's helpful. But, you know, get out and keep moving. That's the message.
Frank, you have your brand, The Noble Art, and the principles that you wrote about it was that it's about purity of boxing, commitment and courage. And I want to ask you, why is the brand important to you?
Well, the brand is important to me, and this is how it's all started. When I started doing all this stuff, and even before, I went back to the gym because I'd been missing from a gym for a long time. But what I did notice was that all the boxers were wearing extremely colourful and attractive boxing gloves on the back. But they were sparring gloves. Now, sparring gloves today are different from when I wore them, right? Because let me just show you, if I can, the thumbs on a sparring glove are right like this, right? So you add here, between this bit and this bit is a little piece of elastic. What does that mean? It means that the sparring glove is dictating where your thumb will be. So you can't do this, which is what you need to do. Now, the very first lesson you should teach a newcomer to a boxing gym is, this is how you clench your fist, right round, and this is the part of the hand that you punch with, the knuckle part of the glove. That was written into the rules. With the sparring gloves, they're like this, and their hands are slightly open. I kid you not, Johnny, I get comments every day and questions saying, I've got pain in my fingers. Why is that? And I tell them, it's because you're wearing sparring gloves on the punch bag. And it's sore. And in fact, they end up punching with this part here. And so they get, and I tried it. So I thought, these are nice gloves. Actually, a boxing glove manufacturer sent me a heap of gloves and said, oh, why don't you wear these? And you know, I tried them 3 or 4 times and I couldn't figure it out, but I was waking up in the middle of the night with pain in my fingers all over, and I couldn't figure it out. I thought, I'm going to start wearing the old style bag mitts again. And I had a pair that were decades old. And I thought, this is different, because this is best because you can clench your fists. So I thought, what if we took it a step further? What if we retained, right, here's the latest gloves I've got. What if we retained this kind of empty thumb, if you can call it that, no padding, and then you were able to clench your fist and wrap your thumb right round like this. Can you see that?
Yeah.
That way, you're punching the bag with, these are called the Noble Art bag mitts. You're punching the bag and you're not hurting. You're coming away. I don't wear wraps, right? But you can wear wraps, but I don't have to because I know I won't hurt my hands because I'm punching properly. The sparring gloves, they were a big no-no for me. So they've taken off. It's unbelievable. We feature them in different colours. But people are buying into the thinking that I have that, you know, if you're going to enjoy your boxing, then you might, you'll do it, you'll enjoy it more if you're able to punch properly and you're not coming away from the gym with painful hands and painful fingers. So let's do it properly. That was my thinking.
And why did you name it the Noble Art?
Well, the Noble Art is an old name, of course. The Noble Art of Self-Defense. That was the saying. That goes back to 1865, as I said, the Marquess of Queensberry. When boxing was, it was for noblemen, right? It was two guys who maybe had an argument in the pub the night before. Instead of going out into the woods and having a duel with pistols or swords, they would fight. And so it was considered in those days that it was the noble art, the art for noblemen, right? And it was called the Noble Art of Self-Defense, and that's important, the self-defense part of it, right? So I just decided to adopt the noble art. And after all, there is something noble about boxing. There's something noble about two guys, any combat sport, in fact, two guys respecting each other, going in against each other, knowing that they're going to be hurt, knowing that they're going to impose damage, inflict damage on their opponent. And yet, at the end of it all, when it's finished, they embrace because they've got this mutual respect. And there's the discipline aspect of it as well. Training for all these days and weeks and months constantly, which it's a routine. Now that sets the tone, in my view, for the way you live your life. So what you'll generally see is that few people who are involved in combat sports, particularly boxing, I'm only talking for boxing, will be in trouble outside the ring with the police, for example. So because they've got that discipline, they know what it is to get a punch in the face, so they're not always ready to punch somebody in the face. So they're able to control themselves and have that discipline of saying, you know, if something comes up where they're caught in the middle of potential violence, they're able to say, I'll just walk away from that because I know what that feels like, you know. And so that's something noble, in my view. The art bit, well, the art is the art of boxing, not the art of fighting. Today we see lots and lots of people who are going there, and what they're doing is they're just being aggressive. They're being furious, you know, they're not being controlled, and where the art comes into it is with the boxer who can outthink his opponent, who can make his opponent make mistakes and capitalize on those mistakes, who can control the fight, who can actually decide what his opponent is going to do in terms of the control aspect of it. I'm going to do this to you, and I'm going to do that to you. So there's an art in that. It just doesn't happen. You can't just go in and wallop somebody because you're going to get walloped back. You know, you can find ways of delivering the punches without being hit back. That's always the aim. The noble art of self-defense, to hit without being hit back. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be perfection. But you could try for that.
Frank, in Scotland, who taught you boxing?
Well, my dad ran boxing clubs, amateur boxing clubs, throughout most of his life. And it was a big deal. You know, he opened his first club in 1946 and then carried on. There were different clubs that he ran after that. So I learned everything from him. Not that he was a coach, but he was a thinker. So he would theorize, and he would think, sit me down and say, you know, what if you did this? What if you little tricks? You should try doing that. In the gym, he ran the gym, but he wasn't the coach. He just ran the whole thing. But he would talk me through the various aspects of boxing. and the necessity to defend your chin, because if you get hit in the chin, then, you know, not necessarily will it put you down or knock you out, but it will kind of give you, send you into a state of daze or confusion, you know. And in those kind of 20 or 25 seconds, you're trying to get your head back in gear, you could be damaged. So it was always, remember, protect your chin. And he did it the old-fashioned way. And that's the way I teach it. You know, there are various aspects of boxing today, modern boxing, which doesn't work. And yet people stick with it. Yeah, and they're taking punches. And they come out at the end of a contest victorious, but at the same time they've got a sore face. And they go to bed at night and they're waking up with headaches or so. That's not a victory for me. That's a waste of time. And it's damaging.
Do you enjoy doing the seminars? I heard you talking about it before.
I love doing the seminars. Because the seminars are with people who have a genuine interest in what I'm saying. Okay, you know, these are older people. People in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even 50s. And so they're trying to learn something. Okay, the vast majority of them will never be boxers. But they might spar, and they'll certainly be on the punch bag in the gym and so on. So why not learn how to do it properly? Why just go into a gym and thump the bag and nobody's there to stop you saying, actually, what you're doing is wrong. However, I can correct it for you and I can make you do it the right way. That's what I'm trying to do. So I love doing the seminars because people really kind of engage with what I'm saying, and they kind of go away after two or three hours, and they think I took a lot from that seminar, and that's what makes me happy.
Frank, can you kind of articulate for us what your training regimen kind of looks like now that you're older? So, how many trainings do you do per week, and what does that look like for your day to day?
I do three a week. Lots of my time now, because of what's happened with social media, is taken up with shooting videos. But during the shooting of those videos, I'm giving it everything. You know, it's exhausting. When I was at the gym yesterday, we go a couple of times during the week. My son Paul does the filming, but we do training while we're there. So I'll do maybe three 3-minute rounds skipping, and then three 3-minute rounds shadow boxing, and three 3-minute rounds on the punch bag. And then at the end, I'll do a series of calisthenics, whether I'm standing, different exercises, floor exercises, tummy muscles, stuff, all that. And in between, I'll try and do a bit of coaching with some of the young guys. So that keeps me active. But, you know, my message is that it doesn't matter what you do. If you leave the front door and walk in one direction for half an hour and then turn around and come back again, that's great. You know, so you've got an hour's worth of walking there. You've got the heart beating a bit faster and the pulse is racing, and you've maybe got a little film of, you know, sweat going on there. That's useful. Imagine, you know, so if you say to people, and I get it, I can't tell you, this is the big thing for me. I get it every single day. Hundreds and hundreds of comments say, I took your advice. I'm now doing this. I'm now skipping. I'm doing shadow boxing in my back garden. And I feel so much better for it. So, you know, depending on your age, depending on your level of fitness, find your own level. It will find you. You know, you can't overdo it the way you're dropping with a heart attack, but you can begin to, you know, after a couple of weeks doing stuff, push it a bit more. Let's try it a bit harder, but not too much. It's not important that you're kind of going full throttle. I've got the problem. My problem is I can't pull back. I have to go full throttle. And it annoys me when I see young guys on the punch bag, for example, and they're going tip, 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 tip. what are you doing? Come on, give it everything. So that's my thinking anyway, Johnny.
I totally agree with you. It's about doing something and building that skill, cultivating those skills and really trying to build off that. You know what I mean? Like, even calisthenics, you brought it up. If you're doing calisthenics or if you're doing a martial art, it's about honing those skills.
Yeah.
And seeing that you told me about, you know, your time boxing in 60s and the 70s, I want to ask you about grappling as well, seeing that it's you have your striking martial art disciplines and you have your grappling martial arts.
Yeah.
Did you ever come across grappling back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s? Did that ever appeal to you?
No, it wasn't a thing in the UK. You'll have to point out the difference between grappling and wrestling, because for us, the only wrestling we ever saw was of the WWE kind, the UK version of it. And there was a very famous wrestler in Dundee, where I come from, called George Kidd, who was a world lightweight champion. Now, I don't know how these things were regulated. You know, I don't know how many world lightweight champions there were, but George certainly never left the shores of the UK to wrestle in any other part of the world, and neither did any of the other wrestlers who were on show on TV every Saturday afternoon. It was all that kind of show business style of wrestling, like WWE. So is grappling different in any way?
So basically what I'm kind of pointing to is you have your judo that's in the Olympics and your Olympic style freestyle wrestling, where you're trying to, you know, throw someone or slam someone. And in Brazil, across the shore, you have your Brazilian jiu-jitsu with, you know, your, it's a different game where it's more ground-based and submission orientated. So were you ever introduced to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, in a gi to trip people and try and get a choke or submit people?
No, never. I never was. I mean, I once was invited by a colleague who was a judo player. And he used to come to the boxing gym with me, and he was quite interested, but he was a judo player. And so he said, do you want to try it? We went somewhere, kind of a judo club, obviously, here in Aberdeen, where I live. And I thought, yeah, let's give it a go. He's much heavier than me. And he was throwing me all over the place, you know, because he was experienced and I wasn't. The first kind of thing he did was, when he got me on the ground, he choked me. And of course, he'd given me instructions earlier what to do if you're ready to submit. Well, I just about wore a hole in the ground with my submission. And I thought, wow, that's different, you know. So, but I've got a great respect for all these people who do all these different combat sports for the same reason that I mentioned earlier, because you know, it's a big deal. You're on your own. You're responsible for yourself. And that's what I like about boxing. Much more so than team sports. You know, if you're having a bad day in a team sport, your teammates can rally to help you through. But boxing and all these other combat sports, you're on your own, mate. You have to just get on with it, you know. And if things are not going your way, you have to find a way to make a difference. It's not up to your coach and, you know, guides in your corner. He could advise you. He could tell you what he sees in the other guy's flaws, but when you're there, it's up to you.
What are your opinions on that? Because the younger generation, they're getting into boxing, and boxing is constantly evolving and the level's getting higher each year. And now this new younger generation's being introduced to judo and jiu-jitsu at the same time. So they have to learn boxing, grappling, and kickboxing, and then they go into MMA, seeing that that's now kind of what is popular in the next kind of evolution of combat sports. So you being from the previous era, what do you think about that, seeing that these new younger guys have so much to learn?
Yeah, I think my gut reaction to that is that if you're going to specialize in a a sport, and even within combat sports, then do just that. Learn every, be the best you can within that sport. I'm not convinced, but listen, I'm no expert on the other combat sports. But I'm not convinced that these kind of crossing over, way of doing the crossing over way of doing thing is good, because it begins, what I find is, I've done a few MMA clubs, for my seminars. And it used to confuse me why they were asking me to come and do a boxing seminar. And they would say, well, it's because we need to know how to punch properly. And I'd go and see them and think, oh yeah, now I get it. Because you can't punch properly. You don't know how to do it. And so I could see that. I recently was, I was down in the south of England, a place called Hartford, in Hertfordshire, to a Krav Maga club. Now, I'd never heard
Krav Maga, it's not real.
Well, there you are. But this guy who ran it, a lovely guy called Gary, and I had never heard of Krav Maga, right? So I looked it up before I went, and I discovered, what I'm watching are all these guys in combat gear out in the forests and, you know, strangling each other and elbowing each other in the face, all that stuff. But of course, when I got there, there's nothing like that. And what they wanted to do was to learn how to box. So at the end of it, I did 3 hours with these guys, well, lovely people. And it was all about boxing. So what I should have done, it was silly of me. I should have said, come on, show me what Krav Maga is within your gym. It was all because of just the MMA mats, kickboxing mats, and so I'm guessing lots of it was kickboxing, that kind of stuff. However, at the end of it, this is true, at the end of it, the guy who ran the club and who was the chief coach said to me, do you know what? He said, I'm going to change my club into a boxing club. He said, because Krav Maga, Krav Maga is not what it's portrayed as on social media. I stupidly should have said, what is it then? But I didn't, and I regret that. But he said, I'm going to change this into a boxing club, because our guys today, again, Johnny, they were mostly middle-aged men, and a couple of two or three women who were in their 30s. One of them was a police officer, and that would come in handy. So what I'm saying is these people got more out of the boxing part of it, I think, than they would from whatever they got in Krav Maga. But in answer to your question, I'm not a great believer in the mixing of the sports. You know, if you're doing jiu-jitsu, if you're doing judo, grappling, whatever, stick to that. Be as good as you can be within that discipline. Don't necessarily kind of cross over. But I get it with the kickboxers, because I can see it when, I could tell instantly, of course, when when I'm doing a seminar in a private gym, for example, and I'll say, right, everybody, let me see how you stand. Let me see how you hold your guard and so on. And I walk around and say, you're a kickboxer. And I went, how do you know? Because I can tell they're square on. They need to be square on for the kicking, you know. They haven't got the kind of, they don't go to the sight so much as boxers do or should.
I was looking at your content and you were referring to Joe Lewis. So I want to ask you, who are your favorite boxers from that type of era? And who do you think we should all watch tape on to kind of learn from?
Well, my favorite of all time and the favorite of most kind of boxing pundits and people who know about boxing was Sugar Ray Robinson, who was 5 times middleweight champion of the world in the 50s, and he boxed in the 60s. Actually, I trained with him in 1964. He was 43 and he was reaching the end of the road. He was still boxing throughout Europe to try and earn enough money to pay the tax man back in the US. but he was supreme. He was, you know, he'd been a tap dancer. And so you could see that kind of fluidity in his movement as a boxer, being a dancer. The rhythm was there. It was wonderful to watch. And he was also a brilliant fighter and a great boxer, and he could mix the two. He always said if he came up, you fight a boxer and box a fighter. And he had the ability to do that. So he could change his style in the blink of an eye to accommodate what was thrown in front of him in terms of his opponent. So he would, and if you listen to Muhammad Ali, he'll tell you that Sugar Ray was the finest there ever was. And you're talking about other guys. There's another Sugar Ray, of course, from the 80s, Sugar Ray Leonard, who was remarkably good. But you mentioned Joe Louis. Now, Joe Louis was a heavyweight, and of course in those days, the heavyweights were probably around 13 and a half or 14 stone. Today, they're enormous beasts of men, you know, 16, 17 stone, or in Tyson Fury's case, 20 stone. And many of these guys are far too big and cumbersome to have any proper movement. You know, they're kind of stuck in their ways, and lots of them can't really throw many combinations, so that after two punches, they're kind of tired out and they want to grab their opponent and have a little bit of a rest. So the heavyweight division in the time of Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano, 13 and a half stone, roughly 14 stone would be massive in those days. These guys were beautiful punchers. One punch knocked people out. You know, because their punches were short, devastating. Not a lot of the stuff you see now where they punch long crosses, and by the time it reaches its destination, it's worn out. You know, it's all short stuff, and it's beautiful to watch. And so Joe Louis was a master of the cross and the left hook, and he can knock guys out with one punch.
What was that training like with Sugar Ray? What do you remember from that?
Well, that all happened. That was really, it was bizarre. It was fantastic. It was like an Elvis fan meeting Elvis, or, you know, a Beatles fan meeting Paul McCartney. It was something similar. I was a sparring partner for Walter McGowan, who was the flyweight champion of the world, and he lived in a place called Hamilton in Lanarkshire, which is just about 12 miles south of Glasgow. And I would go through for weekends to train with him, or sometimes spend a week training and then build up to one of his fights. And one day, his father, who was also his manager and coach, said to me, come on Sunday, but instead of coming to the gym, go to St. Cuthbert's Church Hall. And I said, why? And he said, well, never mind, just go there, you know. So we went there, and the church hall was decked out with a full-size ring and some punch bags, and it had the look of a gym. And there were probably about 50 or 60 spectators in the gym who'd heard that this was happening and came along. And that was always great when people came to watch the sparring, because it raised your game a bit, you know. So I'm in there, I'm 18 years of age, and I'm putting on my wraps, or bandages, as we called them then, because that's what they were, crepe bandages we bought out at the pharmacy. And in walks Sugar Ray Robinson. And Sugar Ray Robinson was appearing, so this was the Sunday. The fight was on the Thursday that I was helping Walter McGowan prepare for, but Sugar Ray was on that bill. He was talking the bill against a guy called Mick Leahy, he was a British middleweight champion. So I thought, I can't believe this is happening. And this is why we'd gone to the church hall. This is why spectators were allowed in, because Sugar Ray Robinson was coming to town. And sometimes I get a bit hazy thinking about, well, what did I say? What did he say to me? But basically, he came over and asked who I was, what weight I boxed at, you know, many contests I had. And I'm just answering the question. Yeah, and of course, at 18, you're in awe of this icon, this boxing god. You're not going to ask him questions. And so we spent maybe 30, 40 seconds chatting, and then we went in to train, and he's on the next bag to me. There was only, incidentally, there was only about four other boxers invited to that training session. So that was a great moment for me, one I'll never forget.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Frank, for your time. Is there any final remarks you want to say to the fans at home as we wrap up the podcast today?
Thank you, Johnny. I've loved that, and great to see you.
Great to see you too. Follow Frank on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you all next time. Bye-bye.
I'm coming for the kill.